Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast, the Left of Lansing podcast. I'm Pat Johnston. And woo, what a week it has been for the entire Republican Party.
The attack on our nation's capital on January 6th, 2021, was an unprecedented assault on the seat of American democracy. As described in the indictment, it was fueled by lies. Lies by the defendant targeted at obstructing a bedrock function of the U.S. government, the nation's process of collecting, counting, and certifying the results of the presidential election.
Can you believe it? For a third time, Donald Trump has been indicted. This time, as you heard from Special Prosecutor Jack Smith announced there, it's for the role that he played on the January 6th Capitol building attack, an attack that led to five dead police officers and several others injured. I mean, this is today's Republican Party. Everybody is getting indicted or going to jail. Okay, maybe not every Republican Party official or politician, but a good number of them. Now, Trump is being arraigned here later on today, today being Thursday, August the 3rd, in a federal court in Washington, D.C. He faces four charges from that awful day for this nation's democracy, and those four charges include conspiracy to defraud our country, conspiracy to obstruct an official governmental proceeding, being the counting of electoral votes, obstructing and attempting to obstruct the counting of electoral votes, and conspiracy against rights, meaning that Trump tried to stop people from their right to vote and to have their vote counted. Now, I always thought this crime, the crime to steal a free and fair election and to undermine our democratic republic in broad daylight for everyone to see throughout the world, was always the most important indictment above them all. You know, I remember coming home from my job on January 6th, getting on my laptop, and seeing the videos of that insurrection and thinking, wait, am I seeing footage from some other third world country? Oh no, wait! That's our country. That's our Capitol building. And those are Trump flags. And those are Trump voters beating cops over the head with American flags. It was an attempted coup d'etat happening right there on live television. And I recall thinking, all for Donald Trump? The same guy who wouldn't even dream of allowing those same people into his own clubs. They're throwing away their lives, damaging their futures, and damaging their reputations of their families, not to mention damaging our country, all for Donald Trump? It's just sad. And it's sad how many people were and continue to be bamboozled to throw logic and facts to the side and to follow this guy all because of the right-wing echo chamber. So, if I may, can I please repeat something that I shared with you before here on this podcast pertaining to the right wing's mantra of personal responsibility? I wish I had an echo kind of sound effect there, but I don't. They repeated that phrase ad nauseum from the Reagan years all the way through the George W. Bush years. And of course, they said that phrase repeatedly during the Obama years, especially during the Obamacare debate. And yet these same people are now trying to say, and I've got to say this without laughing, but they're trying to say that Donald Trump is innocent of any January 6th crime because he didn't know he was criming. I mean, no, seriously, that is their grand defense, that he didn't know what he was doing was wrong. His supporters are saying because he really believed that he won, he shouldn't be charged with crimes. I mean, this is, okay, hold on, hitting my head against the microphone. Okay, I really did that. No, now, this is a monumental moment. It really is a monumental moment in American jurisprudence because think about now. Think how many people will argue that they didn't know they were committing a crime that they were committing. I mean, right, maybe I'll go rob a bank, and when police catch me, I'll just say, well, how was I to know there's a law against robbing a bank? I mean, it seems like a solid strategy. It's no different than Trumpers trying to defend their guy for trying to rob an election. But again, this goes back to the whole personal responsibility mantra of the right wing. I mean, come on, guys, come on. Isn't Donald Trump, who called himself the law and order candidate, isn't he going to take personal responsibility for his actions? It's amazing how they just completely throw all of that aside for Donald Trump. The right wing suffers. They always have, by the way. They suffer from perpetual cognitive dissonance. Always. Oh, and I have to repeat a joke, by the way, that I saw on social media, so it's not mine, but Trump will be tried as an adult. And Michigan Republicans are all in. They are all in for this criming. They are all in for this Republican crime wave with their dear leader at the helm. It was just a few weeks ago, I said it here on the podcast, that every Michigan Republican member of Congress announced that they were going to back the man who's now been indicted 3 times. And my right-wing Republican Congressman, John Molinar, joined in the whole ruse by signing on to a lawsuit that would have overturned Joe Biden's victory over Trump here in Michigan and a couple of other states. Of course, that probably would have nullified John's own electoral victory. But again, these guys weren't giving a whole lot of thought to that because logic ain't one of their strong suits. Now, the January 6th indictment includes the Michigan connection of Trump and his people trying to overturn the will of our vote. The indictment reminds us of how Trump lied by saying that there was some illegal vote dumping that was happening in Detroit. Always sounded disgusting to me. But anyway, you remember when all those Republican activists, including then party co-chair Michelle Maddock, pounding on the glass at the TCF Center as election workers counted the votes. They were just so adamant that Trump was being robbed. Trump continued to make those same lies in December of 2020. And when he brought it up to his then Attorney General Bill Barr, the indictment reads, and I'm quoting here, Barr responded that what had occurred in Michigan had been the normal vote counting process and that there was no indication of fraud in Detroit. Despite this, the next day, the defendant, Donald Trump, made a knowingly false statement that in Michigan at 6:31 in the morning, a vote dump of 149,772 votes came in unexpectedly. We were winning by a lot. That batch was received in horror. Nobody knows anything about it. It's corrupt. Detroit is corrupt. I have lots of friends in Detroit. They know it, but Detroit is totally corrupt. Look, he was still saying that even though Bill Barr told him there was no indication of fraud in Detroit. Look, when you've lost Bill Barr, who did everything in his power to fight for Trump up to that point, well, again, if you've lost Bill Barr, then you've lost pretty much everything. Trump was told numerous times that he lost. He knew he lost, and he didn't care. And if Bill Barr refusing to go along with the big lie wasn't enough, let's not forget that former Republican Senate Majority Leader here in our state, Mike Shirkey, straight up told Trump that he lost Michigan not because of voter fraud, but because he underperformed in parts of the state. Mike Shirkey was the guy who celebrated the storming of the Michigan Capitol by right-wingers with guns and Confederate flags and also Nazi symbols back in 2020, all because Governor Whitmer was trying to keep people alive from a pandemic. That mini insurrection on our state capitol was a precursor for January 6th. So again, if you've lost Mike Shirkey, you've pretty much lost everything. And then there were the 16 fake Republican electors in Michigan, which included Michelle Maddock, who signed certificates claiming to be duly elected and qualified electors for the president and vice president when they were, in fact, fake electors. And they sent those false certificates to the U.S. Senate and National Archives saying that Donald Trump and Mike Pence had won Michigan. State Attorney General Dana Nessel has charged those 16 fake Republican electors with 8 felonies, including conspiracy to commit forgery. Many of those people are old, and some will probably end up dying in prison. Unless they decide to throw their dear leader overboard. And I have to admit, that will be fun to watch. And then, if the third Trump indictment isn't enough, on the exact same day of that Jack Smith announcement,
two prominent players in Michigan's Republican Party now facing criminal charges. They're accused of trying to gain access to Michigan voting machines after the 2020 presidential election. What's next now for former Attorney General candidate Matt DiPerno and former state rep Dare Rendon?
Oh, the hits just keep on coming. That was Devin Skillian from Channel 4 in Detroit. Former state Republican Attorney General candidate Matt DiPerno and former Republican state representative Dare Rendon were arraigned for illegally tampering with election equipment. A special prosecutor submitted the charges against those two winners. DiPerno and Rendon stole election machines because they were going to prove that Trump won the election. So now they are each facing 5-year prison sentences, all for a guy who would never, ever lift a finger for them. I mean, seriously, do you think he'd do the same for them? I'd like to play a clip of this guy named Steve Deese from Glenn Beck's The Blaze Network. He's also a Michigan football podcaster, I believe. Here's Deese having what I would describe at first as a meltdown, but as he continues, it sounds like he's having a live epiphany once he learned how Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani admitted to lying when he accused two Georgia poll workers of committing ballot fraud. Listen.
We are going to the mattresses for these people. We are offering them more accommodation, more chances than we'd offer our own family members, for goodness sakes. And for what? To have Rudy Giuliani go down to Georgia and admit that he lied? Have Jason Miller tell the January 6th commission, yeah, we all knew it was BS. What is this? Some of you don't like it when I use the cult word, but when you like being treated like a schmuck and ask for more, that is a cult. I'm the mark. I'm the sucker. I want to be such. And I resent the person who tries to get me out of that. Those are marks of groupthink, frankly. How many people in this audience sent money to Stop the Steal 3 years ago? How many shows did I waste your time talking about this 3 years ago? How many?
Deese is realizing he's been played. Everybody who listens to right-wing propaganda, come on now. You have to realize that you're all being played. If only everyone in the cult realized the same. This is today's Republican Party. It is a cult, and it is a party that's fighting for a reality that never existed. But while they're busy doing the criming and getting indicted, Michigan Democrats are pushing on, doing the hard work of the people by passing highly popular and common sense policies designed to help the state, designed to help everybody. Governor Whitmer this week signed the general budget into law, and she already signed the education budget into law a few weeks ago. Now, while these budgets aren't perfect, the budget does put more money towards infrastructure improvements, replacing old water lines, helping more young people by expanding a tuition-free community college program. It's helping local communities fight blight and provide affordable housing, because if we're going to revitalize our cities and make them a place for young people to live, we've got to provide affordable housing. And as I've mentioned here on the podcast before, when it comes to the education budget, students are seeing increases in per-pupil spending and free meals for all public school students. Governor Whitmer also signed a bill that's dear to my heart this week, and I know it's dear to many others here in the state. She signed a repeal of that wretched Republican no stricter than federal law. So now Michigan can set higher environmental protections designed to ensure the safety of all Michiganders and to our state. Thanks to strong progressive leadership, Michigan is recovering from 40 years of Republican mismanagement and misguided failures. Budgets, gun safety, abortion rights, expanded voting rights, expanded civil rights, expanded environmental justice, and massive reinvestments in our people are exactly the path forward to helping everyone make it in Michigan, as Governor Whitmer is calling this year's budgets. Progressives and progressive values are pushing on to make the lives of everyone here better and to give everyone a better chance at a good life. One reason for all of these progressive victories here in Michigan this year is due to the strong turnout by Generation Z voters. They came out in droves in the last election and helped cement abortion and voting rights while also helping place Democrats in power for the first time, as I've said, in 40 years. Coming up, I want to focus on the youth vote here in Michigan and how progressives can keep getting Gen Z to the polls. And I'd like to explore if there are ways that we progressives can do a better job at networking and messaging. Jade Gray, digital organizer at Progress Michigan and a co-president of the College Dems at the University of Michigan, is standing by to talk all about that with me. So stick around. You are listening to LOL.
It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need to give Pat a piece of your mind? Or do you have some stories you think Pat should cover? Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. And if you have Michigan beer ideas for Pat, he'll love you even more. Now, here's Pat.
Hey, thanks, Jessica, once again for being an excellent podcast voice, and thank you for all of the hard work that you do here. All right, well, as many of you know, progressive values and policies have really enjoyed some big-time victories in the state of Michigan, for example. One reason why Proposition 3 passed last year, which guaranteed abortion rights in the state constitution, and why Prop 2, which expanded voting rights and access to voting, also easily passed, was because of an influx of 18 to 29-year-old Michiganders at the polls. Researchers at Tufts University in Massachusetts reported that 36.5% of voting-eligible Michiganders aged 18 to 29 cast ballots in that November 2022 election. That was the highest youth voter turnout in the country. The national youth voting rate was just 23%. Joining me this week to talk more about the importance of the youth vote and what's driving younger people to the polls is Jade Gray. Jade's the digital organizer at Progress Michigan, but she's also one of the co-presidents of College Dems at the University of Michigan. I know Jade's got a lot on her plate right now, but I appreciate her for taking some time out to talk with me here this week. Jade, thank you so much and welcome to Left of Lansing.
Hi, Pat. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you about all things progressive politics.
Yes, absolutely. If you don't mind me asking, just to get started, how long have you been at U of M?
Yeah, so I'm actually going into my third year at the University of Michigan. It will be my last year, though. I'm double majoring in political science and women and gender studies. So,
oh, this is it, the third year. Does that mean you're graduating or you're going elsewhere?
I'm graduating. I'll be graduating in May. So this is the finale.
Now, that impresses me a lot because it took me 5 years to get through school. So that is very, very impressive. What do you want to do in the future? Stay in politics?
So I do want to stay in politics. And if Progress Michigan will have me, I'd like to stay there, actually. So really enjoying my work doing digital organizing for Progress Michigan. I have been there for almost a year. It'll be my 1 year work anniversary in September. So for the foreseeable future, I see myself continuing the work here.
All right, cool. Well, we'll talk more about your work at Progress Michigan here in just a few moments. But what got you interested in politics? Was it something that grabbed your attention when you were younger, or was it something that kind of really hit you more when you were in your teens and high school?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. And that definitely sticks out to me. I remember exactly when I first got interested in politics. So I'm from rural northern Michigan, right around where the pride flags turned to Trump flags. And my original start at organizing and getting into politics and progressive values was really when I was going into high school. And I'm dating myself here, but it was actually the 2016 election. So that's what kind of got me interested in, you know, just women's rights and human rights and politics. And so I started with pretty basic organizing, just using my own Instagram and Instagram story to share what I didn't know really other people valued as well. I lived in what you might call Trump country. And so there weren't a lot of similar values surrounding me. And then I realized that social media was a way for me to find folks who shared those values and for me to learn how to help spread them. So I got my start around then and turned that gig into a full-time job now.
That's awesome. So you learned from that 2016 election, even though you were living, like you said, in Trump country in the rural area of Michigan. And I live in a rural part of Michigan, and it is pretty much Trump country here too. Yeah. But you learned through the power of social media, digital media, that there are ways that you could connect with other like-minded people and try to maybe build something.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I did. And so it was nice to see that, you know, start to build over time. And I can say now, when I look at folks that I know in rural Michigan, they're a lot more connected. And I do feel like there are spaces for progressives from all across the state to meet digitally to kind of band together. And that's a huge chunk of the work I'm doing at Progress Michigan, which I know we'll get to later.
I just wanted to ask you real quick, since you are the co-president of the College Dems at U of M, like what kind of work do you do there?
I am one of the co-presidents of College Gems at UM, and I really love the work we do. Specifically, what you'll remember is that we had massive voter turnout in the fall. So a lot of our work was tabling voter registration. We frequently hold events for elected officials to come. You know, we've done a rally with Governor Whitmer, and Pete Buttigieg came, and Jocelyn Benson, and Dana Nessel, and Debbie Dingell, and the senators. So we hold a lot of cool rallies, and then we also do a lot of info sessions. So a great example was about 100 days into the Michigan legislature's term, we did 100 days of Michigan legislature kicking ass, come learn about the progress that's been made. It's a combination of like boots on the ground action, information, and then big organizing celebration.
All right, Jade, I'm not asking you to speak for your entire generation or anything, but right. I'm a Gen Xer. That means I'm pretty old. And we paled in comparison to our parents' huge baby boom generation numbers. I mean, they just dwarfed us completely. We were pretty small compared to them. And I think maybe that's why we were filled. A lot of us were filled with so much apathy that I know and I remember hearing from my peers even back then. And we had this apathy since we didn't think that we really could make much of a difference, that politicians didn't listen to us or really didn't care, and that our votes really didn't matter. And I think that's why one of my generation's biggest albums, again, I'm dating myself here, but was Nirvana. It was Nirvana's Nevermind. Now, that was sort of a bleak outlook on life, but that was our big album at the time in the 90s. So that's how we were. But I'm not getting the sense, that kind of sense from your generation. It appears like Generation Z not only is getting involved, but it seems like to me that you guys are determined to change things and have already even started doing that. I'm not really wrong on that point, right?
No, you're absolutely not wrong about that. And I think that the time of counting young people out of politics or saying, you know, you don't know enough or you don't have enough experience is completely over, because a lot of the issues that we're facing are future issues that are going to affect our generation more than many other generations. So it is worth it to invest in hearing what young people have to say and having them on your teams and having them in your organizations. You're definitely right. We are not taking the backseat on this, and we have done a lot of work, I would say, as the future of the progressive movement.
What are some of the big issues, the main issues that you hear from your peers on campus and across the state of Michigan?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. And like you said earlier, I can't speak for the whole generation, but I can speak from personal experience and a lot of conversations with friends and peers. I mean, one huge thing we know is definitely climate change and taking care of the environment. I mean, that is our future. Luckily, we do get some positive reinforcement here. We know that our voices are being heard. Dana Nessel is fighting like hell to shut down Line 5, and we appreciate that. Another massive thing is going to be just like the basic human rights, the basic civil rights that I'm talking about. The expansion of the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act for queer folks to be protected was huge. I know myself and my peers included were happy to hear that Michigan is a place that we can put down roots and we can feel safe having our families here. Same can't be said for Florida at the moment for a lot of people in my generation. Really, lastly, I think that we saw with Proposal 3 in 2022 that codifying abortion leads to record turnout. And that's something, bodily autonomy, shockingly, is something that folks of all ages care about. So from conversations I had with fellow students and young people, you know, that was a huge motivator. And that shows in the record voter turnout that you were mentioning earlier, and those long lines that we saw at MSU and U of M, people waiting in line till 2 a.m. to cast their ballot because they knew what was on the line. Luckily, all those things I mentioned are either in the process of being addressed or have been addressed in some way from Michigan lawmakers. And that's something that we're really grateful for. I'm very grateful for.
And as we've mentioned here, the youth vote played a key role in helping expand voting rights in the state. And that means everyone will now automatically receive absentee ballots. They'll have at least 9 days of early voting. And I guess you could say, more importantly for college students, those who don't have cars, they can at least use their student IDs to vote. I mean, it's these kinds of massive changes that will help make voting easier for younger people. And more likely, that'll lead them to voting in higher numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. That is going to be huge. And all of the work that Michigan lawmakers, especially Jocelyn Benson, has done to expand voting rights and voting accessibility is huge for all different kinds of people, especially young people away at college. And so putting on my college Democrats hat, I can answer this saying, you know, on the campus, we're doing the best we can, boots on the ground, to have tabling, to be really accessible if people have questions about, you know, how to change their voting location or where they can go to vote or if they can still vote early. It's a double-edged sword. It's really important to pass that big legislative change and then also have people on the ground helping folks, helping other students know that this change has been made.
Jade, just one more question before we move over to the digital work that you do over at Progress Michigan. You mentioned it already with the environment, and I've been talking a lot here on this podcast during the past few months about how we can maybe stop the trend of young people leaving the state. Again, I'm not asking you to talk for your entire generation, but just from what you were hearing from your peers, what would you like to see happen to help keep people your age here in the state? I mean, obviously, I think environmental rights is huge. Environmental justice is huge, but with a better public transportation system work or better paying jobs. I mean, what exactly are you hearing from people?
I like that you bring this up because this is super important for me and it's super important for other young people. Luckily, it's something that Governor Whitmer has explicitly said that they are working on and that, you know, she is making it her mission for folks to be able to make it in Michigan. We need to get our state population up. And if you want to do that, you need to go to young people and you need to take action on the issues that young people care about. You know, like I said earlier, with some of those top issues with abortion, climate, even, you know, gun violence prevention measures, it's really great when I talk to folks around me or even when I think about my choices about where I'd like to live. You know, I'm a Michigander through and through. I didn't know that I always wanted to stay here. I now know that I do want to stay in Michigan and I do want to put roots down here. And I feel way better about that, knowing that some of my basic human rights are protected and we're at least moving in the right direction on the climate, or we have folks in office who are willing to continue to move in that right direction. I think that Governor Whitmer is doing a great job of letting people know that we can make it in Michigan. And, you know, like you said, of course, there are other things I'd like to see: high paying jobs and accessible housing affordability. And yes, public transportation. Those are all great things. But I do think that Michigan has a great pitch to keep people here. We have a lot of awesome folks coming from all across the country to go to school here, or they're from here. And there's many reasons to stay here.
Right. You're right. I've been saying this on the podcast for a long time. I thought that Governor Whitmer's slogan that bigotry is bad for business was a huge, huge step. And it was a way of showing the nation that we are not Florida, that we are not Texas, that we are trying to be a welcoming state to everybody, a welcoming state for all families. Anybody wants to move here, wants to be accepted, this was the place to be. I thought that was a good first step, no doubt. All right, Jade, now as somebody who is nearing 50 years old, if I decided that I wanted to run for office, how best would I connect with a Gen Z voter? Is it through digital media, social media these days? And even beyond that, what could I say or do to best reach out to younger voters?
That's a great question. And first of all, keep being yourself in the sense that you're progressive, because you're absolutely right. That's what our generation's looking for. We're absolutely not looking to go backwards at this time. So keep going with that. That's important. And then walk the walk, right? You can talk about progressive values, but then let's see you actually push through some progressive legislation. Aside from that, let's dip into digital a little bit. Absolutely, social media is one of the most important, if not the most important way to connect to young voters at this time. Everybody is on social media, not just folks who are politically tuned in. So if you want young people in your corner, then you need to meet them where they are and listen to them and value them and come to spaces where they are, come to college campuses. I mean, that makes a huge difference, getting into the spaces where we are. And because, I mean, you know, Pat, that we're going to turn out to vote. If you can reach us, we'll turn out.
All right. Well, Jade, you are the digital organizer at Progress Michigan, and I wanted to ask you the importance of digital media for politicians, activists, and activist groups such as yours, that I'd have to say by far the most effective way to pass along your message would probably be through, let's say, Instagram, TikTok. TikTok, right, is a huge one, and other ways on social media. Speaking of TikTok, and this just hit my brain just now, because I know that there are some state legislatures, not here, but throughout the country, that are looking to ban TikTok. If there was a ban. I mean, that is really going after your generation's major mode of communication, is it not? Because I always thought that TikTok was huge in the 2022 elections in getting the message out, especially the young voters, about the topics, about the issues, and where to vote.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, first and foremost, we do need to hold social media companies accountable, and we need federal regulations protecting privacy and combating disinformation. I want to make that very clear. Mm-hmm. I also want to say that when you're coming for things like TikTok and all-out bans, I just think you're picking the wrong fight with young people. I mean, I just say that as a warning, right? Like, it's hugely popular and it's hugely helpful. So don't take this fight to us. Like, take it to the companies, hold them accountable, put more standards to protect, you know, make sure that the information and what's on these platforms is safe and correct information. Absolutely. So we can agree that we need to hold companies accountable and monitor social media for disinformation, and then also, you know, not shut down a major source of communication and entertainment for young people, but then, you know, also surprisingly people of all ages. So that's my message on that.
Okay. And this is my Gen X cynicism here just coming out of me, but okay. I think the one reason why you are seeing some Republican legislatures throughout the country try to ban TikTok is because they know how huge it was for Gen Z to use it. They know that it is a huge tool. It is a mobilization tool. And I think that is really one reason why they're trying to shut it down.
Yeah. I mean, these are the same people who are trying to roll back our voting rights and marriage equality and right over our bodily autonomy. So this is just another thing that I think folks are simply being out of touch with and trying to roll back. I understand where you're coming from. And I think that this is just a failed attempt at trying to quiet down a generation of voices who are not going to quiet down or back down.
Mm. What is your role as a digital organizer with Progress Michigan? What's that all about?
Like I said earlier, I kind of took this hobby, this enjoyment of mine, and it's a career. And if I knew that when I was in eighth grade or in high school, I would have been psyched to know that I could do this. So I primarily work on a project called the Progressive Megaphone Campaign. It's an effort to mobilize and organize progressives across the state of Michigan and to truly make it more of a community. So one thing, I know you've talked about this on some of your past podcasts, so I'm sure your listeners are aware, the right does a really good job at dominating the digital space. There are right-wing echo chambers all over spreading their talking points and disinformation. And so a good way to think about this campaign that we're building is it's directly combating that by giving folks tools to be more effective online messengers and to, you know, combat disinformation by amplifying our information.
Oh, now that is a great idea. And thank you for talking about that, because it's been my overall complaint. I've been lamenting about it for a long time here on the podcast, that the right wing just does a better job at messaging, and it has a far more effective messaging outlet, messaging arm. That's why sometimes it catches, I'm not just not talking about the Democratic Party, but I think progressives in general, it catches us off guard, because their messaging is so effective and ours hasn't been the best at times. Just as a progressive movement, sometimes it's hard to get everybody under the same tent and everybody under the same, well, not the same messaging, because I don't want all of us sounding like robots or anything like that. We're not the right wing.
Right.
But just a way to get everybody under the same tent to at least be able to communicate and share ideas. Is that what this is kind of about?
Absolutely. So we're trying to build a space here where we can share ideas, and then we can also lift up each other's ideas. So, you know, one reason this really appealed to me, and this appeals to a lot of folks who are already involved in this project, is that, you know, you don't have to feel isolated as a progressive in Trump country anymore. And there are a lot more progressives all across the state than you even realize. And so it's been really amazing to open up some spaces like a Facebook group called the Progressive Megaphone, where folks can interact with each other and we can share content and progressive policy updates and, you know, see other progressives' reactions, whether they live in Alpena or Ann Arbor. You know, we can all be in this group together. A huge, huge component of this project is an app called Our Megaphone. And my best way of describing it is that it's a library of progressive content and post suggestions. I like to say, if you can post a photo of your cat, you can absolutely use this app to post some positive and effective progressive content. And so that's one of the reasons that this idea of having a progressive campaign in Michigan is really accessible and really feasible. And, you know, that's why we're seeing success right now, and why I think that there's space to invite anybody who's a progressive in Michigan into this program.
For people of all ages.
For people of all ages. Yes, absolutely, for people of all ages.
So again, if people are looking for Progressive Megaphone, how can they find it? I heard you talk about a Facebook group, for instance.
Yeah, so we do have a Facebook group. We have a weekly newsletter. We have an app, and coming soon, you know, we're partnering with some other orgs that share progressive values, and we're going to have a Slack channel and a web page. And there's so much balled into this campaign. But easy step, just shoot an email to megaphone@progressmichigan.org, and we'll get you looped in wherever is best for you. And you can join this campaign. You know, you can be an experienced organizer, or you can just maybe retweet some progressive things every once in a while, and there's still a place for you in this program. So again, just shoot an email to megaphone@progressmichigan.org, and we'll be in touch.
Oh, no, that is awesome. All right. I've taken so much of your time. I just have one more question, if you don't mind.
Since you are
an expert in the digital political media world, can I ask you to share your opinion on Governor Whitmer's digital media presence, and if you think that her team is doing a decent job at connecting with young voters across the state?
I appreciate being called an expert on this, and I'm happy to share my thoughts. There is a culture to the internet, and there's a learning curve to being effective on the internet. And I think that Governor Whitmer and her digital team do a really excellent job of capitalizing on what's either, you know, iconic or ironic or simply trending on the internet. And, you know, I think our best recent example is the crossover "We Didn't Know We Needed This Barbie is the Governor of Michigan." And yeah. So I think it was really excellent strategically to do a crossover with Barbie and have a Barbie saying, "Come on, Barbie, let's go govern." I mean, that's just smart. That's what's trending. That's what young people especially are going to look at and think, "Oh, that's funny. That's clever." It's not something that traditional politicians are posting. And I think that that's what makes it amazing. Yeah, I mean, I think the governor's digital team is doing a really, really great job at reaching Gen Z. And my thought on that is that they're both listening to young people and they're hiring young people. So if you want to be more effective at reaching Gen Z, that's what you have to do.
Excellent way to close this interview out. Jade Gray, digital organizer at Progress Michigan and co-president of College Dems at the University of Michigan. Thanks again, Jade, for being on. And while I know that you're going to be busy at Progress Michigan and also busy being a student and with everything else that you do, I hope that you consider coming back here on the podcast sometime again.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I would love that.
A podcast devoted to intelligence, sanity, and freedom, or otherwise known as progressive politics. It's Left of Lansing with your host, Pat Johnston. Need to tell Pat where he's wrong? Or do you actually want to praise Pat? Leftoflansing@gmail.com is how to reach him. Here's Pat.
Remember to help spread the word of the podcast by sharing it on your Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Threads, or whatever your favorite social media correspondence may be. Or you could just give it some good old-fashioned word of mouth by telling your friend or anybody to give it a listen. And please don't forget to give it a good review wherever you get your podcast. Plus, make sure to stop by on leftoflansing.com for the Friday shorts that I post there and other thoughts and musings I post there as well. I want Left of Lansing to serve as a way to give credit to those who deserve the credit on fighting for strong progressive values that'll help the state become a better place to live, such as this, as I'm going to talk about right now in my Left of Lansing Last Call. I'd like to highlight something which caught my eye earlier this week after Governor Whitmer signed the general budget into law. Last week's guest, and who I can now call a dear friend of the podcast, Anna Gustafson, who is the assistant editor of MichiganAdvance.com, posted this story which only proves how progressive, common sense values are improving the lives for some who desperately need it. According to Anna Gustafson's story, and I quote, "Beginning in January 2024, every pregnant person in Flint is poised to receive a one-time payment of $1,500 followed by $500 payments per month for the first year of their child's life. Made through a new program called RX Kids, these funds could mean the difference between being able to rent or to pay for utilities. All right, so this new program will receive over $16 million from the new general budget, which Governor Whitmer signed into law. That $16-plus million is coming from Federal Temporary Assistance for Needy Families Block Grant Funds. That's also known as TAMF. In addition to that, some $35 million has been raised by private organizations such as the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation to help fund the RX Kids program. Now, this money ensures that the program can begin in January of 2024, and supporters are hoping to raise another $20 million to guarantee the program lasts for at least 5 years. Now, here's how the program works. The only requirement is that expectant mothers reside in the Flint city limits. That's it. There's no wasteful and tedious means testing requirements, and the families will decide how to spend the money. There's no requirements on what they can spend the money on. They can spend it however they wish. It's not like these are new ideas, everybody. Other countries are doing something similar. Gustafson notes in her story how South Korea, Japan, the Czech Republic, Austria, and Denmark, for example, offer mothers 52 weeks or more of paid leave. Oh my God, that's just unreal. You can't have that in America. We like people living in pain. And Gustafson also writes how Los Angeles and Atlanta have also begun piloting programs that provide a guaranteed income to some residents, though many of those programs do have some kind of income requirements. Now, the RX Kids program is possible through the hard work by Dr. Mona Hannah Atisha. She's the Flint pediatrician who helped expose the Flint water crisis back in 2014. And also by H. Luke Schaefer, who is the director of the University of Michigan's Poverty Solutions. Schaefer told Gustafson that the RX Kids program is a proven method to help people in the city where the childhood poverty rate sits around 50%. And Schaefer says this program shows families that we trust you, you know what your baby needs the most, and we're not going to dictate what you need. Trusting in people, what a concept. And Democratic State Senator John Cherry of Flint said, "We expect we're going to see all sorts of things that we're trying to address, improve. Maternal and infant mortality, we think we can impact that through this. Childhood development, we can impact that as well." Now, I have to say, if this is a sign of things to come, then this is the change we've all been waiting for here in the state. But I'm hoping in the future that programs like these will receive more than just $16 million in government spending. See, programs like RX Kids will help not just those families receiving it, but it will help the entire community. Who could be against this? Look, we just learned this week how the Yellow Trucking Company is going bankrupt despite receiving a $700 million bailout from COVID funds. We also learned how the Department of Defense originally nixed the company from getting that money, but how the Trump administration overruled that decision due to administration officials having some nice connections with the company. This was also after Yellow Trucking settled a lawsuit for overcharging the federal government. Perhaps, just perhaps, we should consider redirecting our resources to help back plans like this one that's happening in Flint. Unlike flushing $700 million down the toilet to big businesses for political reasons or favors, maybe, just maybe, we can give that money to those who need it, to those who will use it to survive, and to those who will use it to improve their lives and thereby improving the entire community. I mean, come on. After everything the city of Flint has experienced this past decade due to Republican Rick Snyder's self-made Flint water crisis, it's the least we can do. And if Republicans really and truly cared about the sanctity of human life, they'd enthusiastically back initiatives like this one. They'd be backing this every single year. But you know better.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
I I'd like to thank Jay Gray from Progress Michigan and co-president of the College Dems at the University of Michigan for giving us a young person's perspective here this week. And I will provide links to Progress Michigan and how to contact them to be part of their progressive megaphone so that we can all do a better job at communicating with each other throughout the state. You know, hearing Miss Gray made me feel a lot better that we've got young people like her on the front lines fighting for real progressive change. And you know what? We better listen to Gen Z because they are crucial to our collective future. And why did I get the feeling that I may have talked with a major political player in our state's politics for years to come? Thanks again to Progress Michigan Sam Inglot, by the way, for helping out this week. I'd like to say quickly, rest in peace to Sinead O'Connor, who of course died this week. She not only created one of the greatest cover songs of all time when her version of Prince's Nothing Compares to You went number one some 33 years ago, but she always spoke with conviction and fought for what she believed in. Now, for those of you who are too young to remember or may not have even been born, I can't tell you the shockwaves that Sinead sent through the world when she tore up a picture of John Paul II on Saturday Night Live in protest over the Catholic Church's abuses against children. She was vilified, mocked, and threatened for telling the truth. Growing up in Ireland, Sinead knew what she was talking about when it came to the Catholic Church's covering up of childhood abuse. A decade later, in the early 2000s, when it all came to light, Sinead would be vindicated. As comedian and progressive ally John Fugelsang tweeted right after her death last week, "There are people who are still more angry that Sinead O'Connor disrespected John Paul II than they're angry at John Paul II for covering up child rape. My fellow Catholics, Sinead doesn't need your forgiveness. She deserves your thanks." So rest in peace, Sinead O'Connor. You did well. Remember, you can always contact me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Rich, thanks again for all of your work with leftoflansing.com. I'll talk with you next week. Until then, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.